Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Saturday, the 29th of March, recording at 1:54 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this is the big picture long-term outlook, which I did not do last night, as I had mentioned on the comment of the day copy. Reason for that is that I wanted to see Wall Street's close and to be able to cover the news items before doing the audio, but I had to leave early for what turned out to be an exceptionally good performance of Carmen at the Royal Opera House, my fifth opera in 8 days. But it's a bit like the markets, isn't it? You have to seize your opportunities while they're available. But so I will continue today now with this big picture long-term outlook, which is usually recorded on Friday. This usually starts with a quick review of the week, and there are several things of interest. The Asian stock markets were mostly firmer. That was largely following gains that we had seen on Wall Street last week. Now, the exception to that Asian strength, the clearest exception, was China, which had underperformed, falling steadily until Friday, when we saw upside key day reversals. That's an interesting market, and I'll come back to it. The European markets were generally steady for most of the week, quietly steady, I should say, having had a good early start to the week, again following Wall Street's strength last week. Wall Street, however, declined for the last 4 days of the week, and the financials were particularly weak. So that's a familiar story. The long-dated government bonds are mostly quietly steady in ranging patterns overall. We didn't have a lot of activity there. Where we did have greater activity, though, was in the U.S. dollar, which had fallen fairly sharply before steadying slightly on Thursday and Friday. And remember, the dollar had a technical rally, a little bit of a technical rally last week after a short-term oversold condition. But again, it fell back, but it's still above the lows that we had seen last week. The precious metals had responded favorably to the weaker dollar trend, but gave up some of those gains on Friday, when we saw some definite profit taking, with gold ending the week at 931.05 to be exact. The grains and beans, wheat and corn, wheat actually and soybeans have been quite soft. Corn has been the firmer one. Now, corn's firmness flies in the face of what we have seen from a lot of these other soft commodities, where there have been some really quite big corrections following the upward accelerations that we had seen previously. Another exception to that, actually even stronger than corn, has been the rough rice contract, and I posted that chart on Friday. Industrial metals had fallen, mostly eased this week after some good gains last week. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, I've often described what we're seeing in stock markets as a large global deleveraging process and a steadying factor in all of this has been the very large amount of liquidity that central banks have pumped back into the system. So that's been the bull point, and the deleveraging has been, of course, the bear point. Now, where do we go from here? My feeling is that first we're going to see a lot of choppy ranging overall. That's the pattern that we've been seeing for a number of months, and I think it will probably continue for quite some time. That doesn't mean that there aren't pockets of opportunity, but first let's look at this choppy ranging activity. One dominant factor psychologically, of course, is the problems within the United States. These have cast a big shadow over developments just about everywhere. And the question I'm asking myself is, how long are the world markets going to be in thrall regarding events on Wall Street, and specifically events regarding the US mortgage market? Well, while that story continues to feature on the front pages of the headlines, it will certainly continue to be a big influence. But the fact that it is appearing so frequently on the front page, or at least front of the business pages, also tells us that a lot of it is already priced into markets. And if we think about it coolly, calmly, analytically, which few people have been doing, I would argue it's very easy to panic, isn't it? We've seen lots of panicky reactions, lots of extrapolations, lots of fear. But to go back to my original premise, if we think about it on what I trust is a cool, calm, analytical basis, it's a bit bizarre, isn't it, that all of the world's markets are fixated on US subprime loans, and of course the related credit crunch factors that have emanated from that. Now, you might say, well, as some have, that this is the worst financial crisis since 2000, I beg your pardon, worst financial crisis since World War II. And my response to that is, for whom? For the US? Well, maybe, although I think that the problems that we saw in 73 and 74 were quite significant as well. But even if we say yes, it is the biggest financial crisis that the US has seen since World War II, what about all the other countries around the world? And of course, investors are internationalists, or at Fuller Money we encourage investors to be internationalists. You can invest anywhere around the globe. So how big a factor is it, for instance, for India or for China or for Brazil or for Russia to run through the BRICS? How big a factor is it for international resources companies? How big a factor is it, to turn back to the United States, is it for US multinational companies that are benefiting so much in terms of earnings from the strength of the global economy outside the US, and also the weakness of the US dollar in which they consolidate earnings? So, my feeling is that it's a mind game at this stage as much as anything else. People will say, well, come on, David, we've got a complete freeze up in bank lending. Well, of course we do. Why should the banks lend to each other when they are having difficulty actually assessing their own vulnerability in a number of these financial derivatives instruments? Also, in the Darwinian world in which they exist, they're reluctant to help competitor banks. They're far more interested in helping themselves. The Fed is interested in helping all banks, and the way it's doing that is, of course, through the yield curve. It's the same old classic formula with which banking crises have always ended, with a very big bailout, with the Fed cutting short-term interest rates right down to the bone, and enabling the banks, which now include the investment banks, this because the Fed is now allowing them to operate the same policy of borrowing at very competitive rates at the discount window, and then investing that money on a leveraged basis, if they wish, and they do wish, in longer dated US Treasuries. which of course yield more. And if the Fed steps in, as it often does, to keep the prices in that long-dated Treasury market firm, as we've seen recently, then that gives the banks a pretty well guaranteed capital return in addition to the interest return, again, all on leveraged money borrowed from the Fed. So it's the sort of thing you and I can't do, unfortunately. Since we can't borrow from the Fed's discount window, but I don't want to digress. This is the way for banks to recapitalize. Therefore, they're going to be much more interested in doing that than trading with each other or adding to what are perceived as risks on their loan books. And this is going to continue for a while. How will it actually end? Well, my feeling is, first, that you get a long convalescence. And I've often mentioned this regarding the financial sector. It will take a long time to clear up more of the uncertainty, to rebuild the balance sheets for these banks. You also get a long convalescence because it's not immediately obvious what the business plan or how will be going forward. It'll be a much more conservative business plan, but that means that it'll be a long time before we can expect the sort of earnings that banks were seeing in 2005 and 2006, for instance, because that business model that they were using involving all these, the marketing of all these high-risk derivatives, has clearly been torpedoed for a very long time, and no bad thing either. We're going to get back to a much more sensible banking business models overall. So that's the overall background, but to go back to a premise that I mentioned before, that this is, to put this in perspective, this is a very big event for the United States economy. It is a significant event for the European economy. It is a significant event for perhaps banks in Australia that were lax in terms of lending policies, or in other countries where they may have also been lax in terms of lending policies. It is not a big event in many of the world's fastest growth regions, and I think we do need to keep that point very much in mind. So, how long will, go back to that question I raised, how long will the world's markets be totally fixated on Wall Street's credit crunch problems? Now, that's a question that no one knows the answer to, not least myself, but we can think about what would be some of the factors that would help to change the logjam. And the one that people are starting to advocate that I agree with and have mentioned before is that I think this is going to wind up with the Fed nationalizing most of these dodgy mortgages. And you could say that we're really halfway there with some of the plans that they have unveiled earlier this month. So that's the quickest way. I won't go into the rights or wrongs in terms of the of whether the Fed should be doing this and moral hazards and so on. My greater concern is actually going to be what happens here with the markets. Although my private view is it's a sensible thing to do because the U.S. wants and needs to mitigate the recessionary, deflationary pressures that are clearly evident in the economy. So if the Fed stood back and did very little, and it's doing a lot, and just said, well, serve you right, all these people who went in and bought these homes that they couldn't afford, and all these banks that put out these ridiculous loans, and all these financial institutions that didn't do sufficient due diligence when they bought what they thought were AAA products, So in tough luck, guys, we'll let it all go to the wall. The U.S. would experience a huge, long recession. And I'm not sure that that's the best way to create or to resolve the debt problems. So I think what we'll see is the nationalization by the Fed of most of these dodgy mortgages. That doesn't mean that the U.S. housing market will turn around anytime soon. I don't think it will. And I said yesterday, and I'll repeat the point, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some of those in the more vulnerable areas. I wouldn't be surprised to see house prices come down 40% from their highs of a year or so ago, and that process may take 2 or 3 years. But I think that action would actually cushion it somewhat, and frankly, the Fed would be nationalizing the problem, subsidizing householders in the interests of preventing a much, much more serious meltdown. Now, a point I made yesterday, my copy, is how would stock markets react to that? I think they would love it. And I think that it would eliminate, almost at a stroke, the biggest single fear and concern overhanging the markets. Now, I mentioned at the very beginning of my broadcast today that we had seen the Asian markets, China not until Friday, but most of the other Asian markets, including India, start to pick up following Wall Street's gains last week. Now, if we were to see the U.S. stock market take out its January and March lows, and I don't think it will. My feeling is that the chances of that happening are at most 30 to 40%. So, in other words, I feel there's a 60 to 70% chance that the lows are already in as far as the Dow is concerned and the S&P is concerned. If I'm too optimistic on that, we know where the problems will be because those financial shares are still weak. There were rumors on Friday of further dividend cuts in the pipeline. And again, this is, I'm repeating myself, but this is going to be a long convalescence for that financial sector. But the fact that so many other markets have been dragged down during this leveraging process has really created the best valuations that we've seen for many markets, really many stock markets, since that 2003-2004 period. And my feeling is that, first, investors need to be in no hurry if they have capital that they wish to put at work in the markets. In other words, the fear of being left out by a sudden explosive rally, I haven't seen anyone expressing that fear, but I don't think that's a big risk, is the point I'm trying to make. Is this a time when one could be nibbling on weakness in preferred markets and some of the higher growth markets? I certainly think so. And I think the ones that are frightening people at the most right now, China, India, offer some of the best opportunities. If you want more conservatively valued markets, well, there are plenty of them among Asia's other stock markets. Thailand is an example. Japan among the developed markets is an example. Taiwan is one that looks very interesting to us, but I like the whole sector generally. And the resources plays, again, I much prefer to buy those on setbacks. They've given up a little ground, having tested their highs. I'm thinking of shares like Rio and funds such as the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust. I don't like to pay up for any of these things as much as I like them for the very long term, and I'm happy to hold them. In this environment, when investors are quite nervous, understandably, and we get some emotional and fairly indiscriminate selling, the time to be buying is when something that you regard as having good value for the intermediate to longer term is clearly oversold or is clearly seen one of those sharp overall corrections. And there have been plenty of those, haven't there? But that's the time. My point is, don't pay up in this environment. We don't need to pay up for anything. The areas that look most interesting are the ones that have taken the biggest hit. Okay, moving on, because I don't want to make this broadcast too long here overall. I think that the bond markets here will probably hold up, continue to hold up reasonably well. I'm talking now about the long-dated government bond markets. I should have specified that at the very beginning, but I think the prices will hold up. In other words, yields stay relatively low until the overwhelming concern regarding events in the U.S. economy begins to ease. In other words, when people's concerns are less focused on the risk of recession and deflationary pressures, and they are beginning to look ahead towards the next pickup in the global economy overall, which is not threatened with a recession, unlike that period in 2001, 2002, when many economies did slip into recession. We're seeing a slowdown in the global economy this time, but I don't think it'll be anywhere near as severe for most economies as we saw back in 2001, 2002. But my point regarding the bond markets is that when investors feel that the U.S. problems are now at least known and being dealt with, and again, I feel that nationalization by the Fed of those very dodgy subprime loans would go a long way to creating that improvement in sentiment. That at that point, bond investors are going to focus on the fact that real yields really are not at all attractive, and that inflationary pressures coming largely from foods and industrial resources are high and going to remain high for quite some time. And at that point, I think the long-dated government bond markets will be quite vulnerable to a correction. And at the same time, I expect that stock markets will be performing very well indeed. Now, in terms of the US dollar, I've mentioned that I didn't see scope for more than a technical rally. And having seen the dollar index ease back towards its lows, I think that there's about a 50-50 chance that we could see a little bit more in terms of a short covering rally. That's I certainly wouldn't be buying the dollar for anything like that. I don't like the dollar at all. But my hunch regarding sentiment is that people are a little too bearish in the short term, and that indicates that there are very, very big US dollar short positions in the market. It's quite understandable. US economic problems, low interest rates, the overall trend on their side, they want to be short the dollar. But that does lead to these periodic short covering rallies, as we know. And we saw a brief rally following the initial oversold condition, and so often these technical rebounds occur in two stages. In other words, we've seen the pullback close to the dollar index's lows, I would not rule out the possibility that we could see those lows hold and the dollar firm a little bit in the days or weeks ahead. I do not look for any big rally, and as I say, I would not be buying the US dollar for that rally. The currencies that I do like for the medium to longer term are the resources currencies and the Asian currencies. The Asian currencies are the best of all on a very long-term basis. They're the most undervalued, and they're also backed by some of the very best growth rates overall. Precious metals and the commodity markets. I'm just glad that earlier in the month that I was providing so many warnings about the accelerating price trends that we were seeing. Certainly, for most of this year, up until recently, the agricultural commodities were by far the best game in town. But as we've seen on so many occasions previously, accelerating price trends just are unsustainable beyond the short to occasionally medium term and are almost invariably followed by big corrections. Now, there are a lot of new subscribers, so we've been blessed with a nice steady flow of new subscribers for many, many months now. And some of you may be relatively new to the sort of behavioral technical analysis that we use at Fuller Money. But the one thing that you want to be aware of and to train your eye to spot, and it's not hard to spot on charts. Don't think about drawing lines all over the charts. Just look at the chart and say, what's going on here? Is it trending? Is it ranging? If it's trending, is it trending consistently, in which case it's almost certainly still in motion? Is the trend accelerating up or down? If it's accelerating, that is an ending, as we say at the chart seminar, of an unspecified duration. If the acceleration is huge, common sense tells us that there will be a significant correction, medium-term correction, and that medium-term correction can be anything from a few months to a couple of years. So I do feel that the best of that commodities game is over in the short term. Commodities are also vulnerable to the deleveraging process. Commodity prices are vulnerable to the deleveraging prices that we're seeing elsewhere. And I again would be cautious in that area, and that also applies to the precious metals. We had the big acceleration in platinum. We had a lesser acceleration in silver. We did not have that much acceleration in gold, but it was one heck of a big move upwards in gold, which is approaching a period seasonally when it doesn't do all that well. So, again, I think that the probability is that we're in a medium-term corrective phase in the precious metals as well. And for that reason, I stood aside earlier in the month from my precious metals futures long positions. But is this still a secular bull market? Absolutely, in my view. I think, and ditto for the agricultural commodities, I think these are secular long-term bull markets. These are right at the forefront of our supply, Fuller Money supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. But they ran ahead of themselves and are now due for corrections. I posted a report on Friday from Barclays, which I think put it in perspective, although they may be even more cautious or short-term bearish than I am, as far as the sector is concerned. But the idea that the whole world is going to be starving in a few years' time, I reject. Or if that is the case, it won't be for known factors, because more land will be brought into production. The third world, so-called, has a lot of scope in which to improve the efficiency of its farming. That will happen. That transfer of technology and equipment will certainly occur, just as we've seen it in so many of the manufacturing areas. So I think the scope for developing countries in particular to increase their production of agricultural commodities, not least in South America, is very large indeed. Now, that still runs up against a population that's global population that's growing by about, well, figures vary, but one that's perhaps in the middle is at about 75 million people a year. So you've still got this fast growth rate, and even more important, we've got the wealth creation that's taking place in many of these regions, increasing demand for meats, which eat lots of grains, as you know, the animals eat lots of grains, and so this is increasing demand enormously. This is the fundamental underpinning that long-term bull market, but the important point to emphasize right now is that the commodity play ran ahead of itself and is in a corrective phase. And I think that's pretty much it for another week. And I look forward to next week in covering the markets with you. The week after next, I will need to be away on some family matters, but Owen will be coming back from his paternity leave. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.